And welcome into Big Talk
College Sports.
Take two. Good morning and welcome into Big Talk College Sports with Midwest Perspective, Blue Collar and Blue Blood. I'm Dalton Shetler. That's Sam Sprunger. We're getting our bearings around here this Friday, but we got a lot that we're excited about to go over here in this show.
Yeah, what a morning. We're trying something out new. We're streaming on Instagram as well, and I was getting
a second running
in my ear because the window had to be open and it was giving me the preview. So I was hearing the music again, thought I hit the button a second time. So then I hit the button a second time and it was a mess. Good morning, everyone. How are we today?
These are all problems that people, I think, can relate to. But, hey, we're off the ground and running here for this episode of Big Talk. We got a lot of Big Ten basketball to get into. We are starting to get into the swing and kind of the final stretch of non-conference play before we pick Big Ten ball back up again. We had our appetizer of Big Ten play.
Yeah, that's kind of what and I consider this kind of the appetizer of the basketball season, because here in a couple of weeks, the football starts taking back over just a little bit to where the CFP yep. comes through. So this is kind of the appetizer of college basketball. So we kind of got an appetizer of an appetizer. Is that what we had there with the Big Ten or with the Big Ten games there?
A mini appetizer? I feel like that's on a menu. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Like I was trying to think how those are labeled on menus. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, I'm not
in a dwarf.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a lot of Big Ten basketball to get to, but as you mentioned, football is still here, and the bowl season kicks off tomorrow.
Do we care?
I was going to ask you, is there anything that's got you pulled in at all?
No.
Okay.
I would like to maybe see how Iowa does just for comedic action, but maybe that's it. But
and that's in a couple of weeks, so we can conclude our bowl coverage for this weekend's games in the upcoming week, because there is no Big Ten involved with this first slate of bowl games.
That's the way it normally plays out, isn't it? Like the first week or so, there's some smaller schools that play their bowl games.
The first Big Ten game will be the Las Vegas Bowl, where Northwestern will play Utah. That's December 23rd, so not this Saturday, but next Saturday.
I guess I would be interested in that one just for the story behind Northwestern playing in a bowl game this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think when we get closer to the Big Ten games, it might reel us in, but these little ones, it's going to be background stuff on the television, I think, for myself for the weekend. But there's such a slate.
I was just going to say, I don't even know if I even have it on the background, to tell you the truth. I'll have some basketball on the background. Like, it would be more interesting to me.
And I was going to say that it may not even make my background either, because what we have for college basketball tomorrow is a ridiculous slate. Number two, Kansas travels to Bloomington, Indiana to take on the Hoosiers.
Wow, that's a big game.
On-campus game. Yeah, I mean, it's so nice to get on-campus games back. We have a top three showdown between Purdue and Arizona. That one's in Indianapolis. We also have, I know you're excited to jump in.
The top three teams in the country are within like 100 miles of one another.
I know. It's insane.
That's all of it.
And then you head up a little bit up the road to Detroit, Michigan, and Michigan State's playing number six Baylor. Now, of course, Michigan State's still trying to figure themselves out, but number six Baylor here in the area as well. I mean, this is just a ridiculous stretch of basketball games for this Saturday.
Yeah, I'm so excited about it. And of course, I have things to do, but I don't care. I'm going to be glued to at least some sort of a device, even if I'm not actually watching or / listening to it. I'm going to be paying attention to it because it's all so like this. We'll find out, I guess, maybe how Michigan State's going to rebound against someone like Baylor, a team like Baylor, you know, a really good, tough top 10 team at this point. Can they rebound, you know, and come back and regroup, I guess, because right now they're not looking like a good basketball team.
And so maybe we should start there, because we just had a little pre-show meeting before we actually hit and we covered a couple of teams or mentioned a couple of teams to each other that we want to talk about. And you brought up Michigan State, and I think many of our listeners would be interested in Michigan State basketball and kind of the struggles they're going through at this time. Yeah. Michigan State right now 4-5 on the season. Again, this was a preseason number 4 team in the AP poll, but they have really struggled to kind of find their own here this year. And now they get ready to take on a Baylor team, which Baylor, again, really good. They're number 6 in the country for a reason. Their guards are long. Their guards are great. What stands out to you about Michigan State basketball heading into this game?
It just doesn't seem like they have a flow that somebody with that much leadership, that experience should be playing right now. They're just not. Agreed. It doesn't appear to me that they're playing like a team. AJ Hogard is a senior, right? I mean, he doesn't appear I don't know him at all, but it just appears that he's not, you know, taking the reins. I mean, you're a senior. At some point you should have some leadership, and it just doesn't appear. And I'm not picking on just him. It just doesn't seem like anybody wants to say, "Hey, I'm the leader of this team." And it's, I don't know, a captainless ship on the court.
I was going to say, I think you can expand it beyond just AJ, the upperclassmen in general. It's just not what you expect maybe from upperclassmen. And then from a basketball perspective, I think there's a couple of things at play, but one of the biggest ones is the production out of the 5 spot. It's just not there, especially offensively.
And there was expectations of it too.
So now we get to a spot where in their game against Nebraska, they don't even play one of their centers. They just go small ball. And that seems to maybe be a recipe for disaster when you get into Big Ten play. It just feels like you need an actual back-to-the-basket type scoring threat, which Jackson Kohler may be able to provide when he comes back from this injury. I mean, that's something important to keep in mind because Jackson's strength is offense. The weakness is defense for Jackson, where for Carson Cooper and Mati Sissoko, it's the opposite. They're defensive players. They're supposed to be in the rebound. They're the gritty guys. Jackson Kohler is somebody who is dynamic down in the post, and he can give you some options. So I do think once Jackson gets back from the injury, it changes the dynamic layers that the Michigan State offense can provide because you have to respect what's down there in the post. And right now you have so many different players helping off. You have so much going on that's affecting everything else. And that's why Michigan State said, you know what, here in game 9, we're in the conference game on the road in Lincoln, 10 minutes or whatever it is, we're going without a center. We just got to find an answer because this is not working.
Was that Coach Izzo's way of trying to kind of do it on the fly, trying to figure it out on the fly and try to get a win? Because they weren't going to get the win with what they were doing anyway. So let's try something new on the fly and maybe we pull it out.
And we've seen it for 9 games in a row now. Like, it's not just a fluke thing. Yeah. There's enough evidence to support that this formula is really going to struggle as it has, just given that the way the offense works. And so much of the Michigan State offense, too, because it is also, you know, the same offense that Izzo has ran since he got there in 95 as the head coach. A lot of weave around the perimeter, and then you get to a high ball screen with 10, 12 seconds left and play. Like, that's a lot of what happens with Michigan State's half-court offense, whether that being intentional or not. That's how it kind of plays. And what I think is missing is the threat from that pick, because last year Joey Hauser could pick and pop, and that forced defenses to kind of stretch themselves and made guarding those ball screens really difficult. A couple years before that, you had, let's say, Xavier Tillman in those pick and rolls with Cassius Winston. Like, you've always had some kinds of threats that are working off those ball screens to make it, you know, kind of a two-edged sword, and then you play out of it. Right now, I don't think teams are respecting the pick. I mean, it's all about, okay, if Tyson's coming off this pick, let's hard hedge, let's force him out, let's make things tough on him in the final seconds, and if the screener slips, we'll take our chances. Like, it's that type of mentality when guarding Michigan State, and they have got to find a way to make things more threatening on the offensive end from all sorts of positions.
So I guess my question is, you know, I honestly, if you're good, if you've got the athletes and you've got a good system, you can tell people what you're going to run and you're still going to be effective. Now, is this a facet of Michigan State just not having the talent around?
I don't think
used to have.
You can finish your question, but I don't think that's the problem.
You don't think that? Okay, that and no. And that's what. So you think it's just as much talent as when it was being successful. So there's just something else in there.
Oh, I think there's a reason that this group was selected fourth in the preseason poll. Mm-hmm. I think this backcourt between Walker, when Hogard's on a good day, I mean, that's always a little bit of the formula. Jaden Akins has struggled this year, shooting slumps, a couple of different things, but he's talented for sure. Yeah. He's just going through a rough patch. I think there's a ton of talent, but I do find it interesting the way it kind of fits together because every team's got its own formula, right? I think that five spot, right now, there isn't a fit that's allowing things to click. And I think they have to either tweak that formula, and that's what they tried at Nebraska, where they're like, okay, small ball. Like, what else are we going to do? Or I think maybe you give Xavier Booker a little bit of run, the five-star recruit, McDonald's All-American. And I know Tom Izzo had said this after the loss to Nebraska because he was asked about the idea of playing Xavier Booker, and he had said, look, people got to chill on Xavier Booker. He's not quite there yet. And I would
trust Tom Izzo, too.
100%. But all I would say is if you're already going through a losing stretch, you're looking for answers, Xavier Booker doesn't need to come in and be a collegiate All-American. He just needs to offer some sort of possibility on the offensive end. He's going to have rough stretches too. I mean, especially if Tom's saying that.
Sure.
He's going to have times where he gets lost defensively. He's going to make freshman mistakes. No question about it. Nobody's expecting him to come in and be Hakeem, or they should not be expecting anything like that. But just the idea, because right now it just there is not a low post scoring threat at all. And I think Xavier Booker, whether it's that or him shooting threes at 7 feet tall that he does fairly well. Mm-hmm. I think you might want to play with the possibility of that. And Tom pointed to the fact or teased the fact earlier that Xavier's going to have opportunities this week in practices. So we'll have to see if Xavier was able to put the work in, take advantage of that, and get a little bit of run here. Because, I absolutely hear, Tom, that people got to slow down with him. He's not quite there yet. But given what we've seen at that five spot, I think it's worth maybe exploring the possibility if Xavier fits there at that five.
Yeah, it's been a
and I don't mean to cut you off, but I just want to say again, when Jackson Kohler comes back, that's going to change things as well in a very net positive for Michigan State.
Expected back soon?
Yes. Like he's missed the entire season and he was supposed to be back around the holidays. So we should be seeing him back sometime
soon. The holidays, right?
Like we're knocking
Merry
on the
Christmas.
Door. So for our listeners, pay attention when Jackson Kohler comes back. I'm very interested to see how it changes the dynamic of the Michigan State offense, because then there's an interior threat in the post. And
it might not take place immediately either, because he's got to work into he's in his preseason mode right now.
Correct. Got to get back into
it. It might be a few games into the Big Ten season before you get full Kohler, you know?
Yep. So, but that's one of the big things pressing right now with this Michigan State team. So that'll be interesting to see.
It'll be interesting to see how they play. I don't even know that they have to beat Baylor for me to have a little bit more faith in them, because this is the first Michigan State team in a really long time that I can remember that really just doesn't have an identity.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And it's just, so it's an odd feeling. So if they can hang and show some life against Baylor, and maybe they lose by, you know, 7 or 8 points or whatever, that at least is a close game to where you could see, okay, they have a four ranking in them. It's just, mm-hmm. they got beat by Baylor or whatever. So, you know,
at this point, you're looking for progress. Like right now, the light bulb has just been off for about the entire season. You've seen a couple flickers, but this team is playing basically at its basement. Like the ceiling is still there for this team.
Right.
They just are playing at their basement. And I think that's important to keep in mind when evaluating Michigan State. Now, what does that mean?
That doesn't mean they're coming out of the basement anytime soon. They've got to fight their way out of it. But
yeah, it's a great, but they can't, this is, I think, just about the worst that we could see this iteration of Michigan State basketball play through 8 or 9 games. I don't think that's a stretch to say. They are at their basement when you look at the ceiling of potential. But the big question to me is, we got a couple weeks before we resume Big Ten play. Michigan State's 0-2 in conference play, and the non-conference didn't help them because they lost a lot of good games. Right. I mean, they lost a lot of great teams, but you lost a lot of games there. You're going to have to climb that ladder in Big Ten play to try and keep this tournament streak alive, which, again, that's what I want to say here is, especially with the ceiling still there, you can do that. This team is capable of absolutely accomplishing that and then getting into the tournament and mixing things up like we saw last year, a team that was struggling. Then they got into March Madness, and all of a sudden they just obliterated USC, Marquette in back-to-back games, and then should have probably beat Kansas State, but Kansas State, it was just their night. Dolan. Yeah.
I would not be shocked. Honestly, I would not be shocked if we're standing here at the end of March saying Tom Izzo's going to the Final Four.
It wouldn't be the first time.
I honestly do not. I would not be. It would not be a shock to me because I've seen those types of things happen. And I'm saying this is the one team that I can remember in a really long time that doesn't have an identity. That doesn't mean he didn't have teams that struggled.
Right.
There was an identity to those teams. They just were struggling to fire. This one just doesn't seem like they have any guidance. They don't have any on-court guidance to give themselves an identity.
And I would say it felt like that a lot last year at times too, where there was a stretch where they went through and they were solid offensively and there was no defense. And then they flipped and you're just kind of sitting there watching. And then they put it all together in March. I think this team's ceiling is capable of doing another run where they get into the tournament and do really well in March Madness. But the question is, how long will it take for that light bulb to fully come on? Because we got a couple weeks and they got to come out of those Big Ten gates. I mean, kind of roaring to go, given what we just said with the non-conference not being favorable to them in terms of how the selection committee is going to look at them. Again, not favorable in terms of they lost the games, but they played some tough teams. And, of course, starting 0-2 in Big Ten play. The question to me is, how quick can that light come on? And I think that's why so many people are investing so much in Jackson Kohler's return.
They have 3 games after Baylor if they should by all means win. They've got Oakland, Stony Brook, and Indiana State to round out the preseason regular or the pre-conference season, and then they get into at Northwestern, at Illinois versus so that they get baptized by fire once they hit back into the Big Ten season.
Yes,
but they can get back to 500, slightly over 500, if they were to stumble to and get beat by Baylor.
Yep.
So it's all dependent on how they recover in the Big Ten and how they, because if they are at 500 going into Big Ten season, they're already 0-2 there, but they've got to get back to, they've got to have a good conference season. They can't go and lose to somebody like Minnesota, who's traditionally in the past few years been not very good at all.
And Michigan State's had years in the past where they could be 500 or sub 500 in conference play and still make the tourney, given that the Big Ten A was that strong and what they did in the non-conference. But both of those are not quite true this year. I mean, they didn't win those games in the non-conference, and the Big Ten is down. So they're going to have to make their hay when we get into January and February and winning those games. We talked a lot of Michigan State there. I do think they're just about the most fascinating story, though.
It is because of the expectation that they had and what they're performing at now. That's why it's a topic. It's not because Dalton's wearing green and white. It's because it's that important. It's odd and it's an unusual thing to see Michigan State like this, not necessarily losing some games, but just like this.
Let's shift the spotlight then to a couple other programs here. How about Northwestern? A couple weeks ago they upset number 1 Purdue on their home floor, and you're thinking, here we go again. The Cats are going to just ride their way through again, just like they did last year. Mm-hmm. They only have a couple turnovers. And you fast forward a couple weeks, and I think it was this past Wednesday night, They lose to Chicago State at home.
At home. Did you see the pictures or the shots?
I watched that game.
Crowd? Did you?
I did.
There was nobody there.
Yeah. Yeah.
They packed the house against Purdue and on break. I get it, but still.
And I think that is part of it. And they're like, again, the upset against Purdue where you saw that crowd, that was a lot of students. And I think a lot of the students are gone. Sure. Like, they don't have a ton of like older fans that come to those games. Like, that's it's not a large amount anyway. But I was so flabbergasted watching that game. Like, I saw it was kind of seesawed. It was close, and that's when I tuned in. It was just like kind of start the second half. Point
lead or something and kind of stretch it out a little bit.
Yeah. So in the second half, I'm kind of watching them go back and forth. I'm watching Northwestern struggle, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, any minute now they'll start to put a couple on, go on a quick run, get up and never look back. And they got up 8, to your point. And I thought, okay, that's it. I mean, it's like, look, no disrespect, but Chicago State, this isn't their just first ranked win. This is their first high major program win. Like, this is a program that has struggled.
They're not even in a conference, Dalton.
I mean, they have mightily struggled for years. Like, unbelievably struggled.
They're the only Division I team that doesn't have – they're the only independent in basketball. Only one.
It's so hard to explain. But so I'm sitting there and I see Northwestern with the 8-point lead and I'm like, okay, there it goes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Chicago State comes roaring back and I can't remember what the guy's name was, but he dropped 30 points in this game to help Chicago State get the win. And he just had a big bucket every single time. It was like Carday or something like that. If you're pulling it up,
I'm trying to get there. I was looking at, there we go. I can get there now.
But
go ahead.
Chicago State pulls off this upset. And now we're all kind of scratching our heads about Northwestern. But again, we're all kind of scratching our heads about, okay, so what is the Big Ten this year?
Wesley Carday. His name?
Carday, okay.
Yeah, Carday Jr. Wesley Carday Jr. scored 30 points as Chicago State stuns number 25, Northwestern.
It was ridiculous to experience because those games, I mean, whenever like a lower team kind of comes in and once they get down, like 99% of the time you just fold it up and go home. Like, that's it.
Well, Chicago State was 3-9 going into the game.
Their women's program is like 0-12.
Yeah.
Like, again, I cannot put into context how much Chicago State basketball as a collective has struggled for years on end.
Yeah.
For them to beat Northwestern, a Northwestern team that just beat the number one team in the country, I already am kind of confused on what basketball is this year.
It's not going to be football season, is it? It's not going to do this to us. They're not going to, the world's not going to give us a basketball season that's just as crazy as the football season, is it? Well, the West Division, I guess, like it should
say. Yeah, I was going to say,
going to be like the West Division?
I really don't know what to do with that. I was so impressed with Northwestern after the Purdue game, and I really don't want to take away from that. No. I'm just going to chalk it up as a throwaway game
for
now.
It was an anomaly. It was an anomaly, I think, you know. They played a great game against Purdue, and I think they didn't against Chicago State. And Chicago State probably played a heck of a lot better than what they normally
did. And they did. Chicago State played really well.
So I'm guessing it was two storms crossing at Purdue and Northwestern, and then two storms crossing at Chicago State and Northwestern.
I mean, that was something else. But so that happened in
between like 4 or 5 days, or I guess it was not 4 or 5 days, but it was like a week or two.
Silly. So Northwestern, who was at number 25, suffers the loss. There are two other Big Ten teams ranked in the top 25 outside of Purdue, because everybody knows about Purdue. And we talk about Purdue a lot. We could talk about them a little bit here, but because they got the big matchup with Arizona, but we'll skip past.
It is a big game.
It is a big game.
We'll talk about it next week when you're not around.
That works. We got a couple different areas we could go here for the next school. What one do you want to hit on?
I wanted to talk about Minnesota because they are at 8-3 this year, which, don't get me wrong, that's not the greatest records, but for Minnesota it is, because the past three or four years they've just really not been a good program. And you know, they had one of their best players transfer to Ohio State, Jameson Battle's over in Columbus now. But right now they're sitting at 8-3, 1-1 in the conference. But I want to know, is this self-sustained? Like, is this who they've got on their schedule? They're kind of cupcakey, or are we looking at Minnesota maybe not necessarily being a top rung team in there, but one flirting with the bubble by the end of the year?
I think this is not sustainable. I think we have seen them beat some bad teams. And I think we've seen them hang around with some better teams. Like, don't get me wrong, I do believe Minnesota is better than I thought they would be this year, but I still don't believe it's a team that ceiling is bubble watch worthy. Like, I think this team is going to finish somewhere between 12 and 14 in the Big Ten conference. I think the conference, even though I just was talking about how it's a down year for them, I mean, if we run through the teams, like, it's a hard ladder to climb. And right now, I just don't know that you have the horses to get that done. I mean, and especially in today's day and age with the NIL and everything, it just feels like Minnesota takes a little bit of a backseat. Like, again, given the fact that Jameson Battle leaves for Ohio State. Like, you get a good guy, and then he ends up going to a better program.
In the same conference, even.
Jerks. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think it's sustainable. I do believe, though, like I said, this team is better than I thought. They're impressive. Like, I really thought it was kind of a little bit of doomsday. I thought Minnesota and Penn State would be fighting over the top of each other for 13th and 14th in the Big Ten conference this year. And they both have one win. They're both 1-1 in the early swing of conference play. Yeah. So I think it's impressive what Ben Johnson's done. I like Ben Johnson. I just think it's going to be a hard place to win.
They beat Nebraska. I mean, they
they did. And Nebraska was undefeated at that time, or they had one loss? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's right. They had one loss. They had just lost to Creighton. Minnesota beat them. Now, I think it's probably, I'm looking at the starter when they up their Big Ten conference season: at Michigan, home to Maryland, at IU, home to Iowa, at Michigan State, home to Wisconsin. Jeez.
Yeah.
That's hard, because maybe if there's one that would be, Michigan's not playing the greatest. They won their last time out, but they're not playing the greatest. I mean, maybe them, but Maryland should. That should be, they should beat at Minnesota. IU should. Iowa probably, maybe. I don't know. They're kind of down.
Iowa's struggling.
Yeah, they're struggling. But Michigan State, by then, Michigan State should have the ship righted and they should be cruising along, right? Should.
Yeah. So I'm very much with you. I like, again, the play they've had. I like what Christie's done there. Max Christie's younger brother, Cam. Yeah. He's played really well early on. He's averaging 12 points a game. Dawson Garcia's flirting near a double-double average. I think he's like 18 points and 7 rebounds a game. I like what they do, and I really like the coach, Ben Johnson. All the all-access stuff I've seen and consumed of his content, I think he does a really good job. I just think it's a hard place to win, especially in this Big Ten conference.
Well, and he took on a program that was pretty much the worst that it could be, maybe one of the worst programs in Division One, maybe at the time that he took over.
And because he took over after they decided to get rid of Richard Pitino, and Richard actually had a solid run at Minnesota for the most part, but especially once Richard left, like, so did all the talent that Minnesota had at that time. Like, the cupboard was bare when Ben came walking in, and Ben's now into year 3, I believe. And it's, It's just hard to get the high level talent in the conference to land in Minnesota. I think it's just that, but I'm impressed with what they're doing. Again, I don't know that their ceiling is bubble watch worthy, but I am impressed with what they've done. They had a 2-point loss to Missouri. They had a 10-point loss to Ohio State. You mentioned they beat Nebraska earlier. I'm impressed with how well they've been playing, but I just don't know that their ceiling's high enough.
I'm guessing they're going to be able to pull off some upsets throughout the season.
Yes, I think so too.
Season. So it's one of those teams you can't take for granted, but some people are going to trip up to them, I think. I think they're going to upset some teams, and God help it not be Purdue. But
and again, I mentioned earlier, I thought heading into the year they would be fighting with Penn State for 13th or 14th in the conference. Mm-hmm. I mean, last and second to last. And now I think their ceiling is more closer to maybe getting a bye in the Big Ten tourney. Like maybe they could get to that 10th spot in the Big Ten.
Right.
I mean, that's
an accomplishment for their
expectation. It is. And I think that's how we have to grade it with that context. But
they play Ball State in next Wednesday. So I'm going to be
proud alum. Chirp, chirp
for them. Chirp, chirp. Yes. Yes. I went to Ball State. I went to like 4 different schools. So sue me.
Oh, I forget that you have a collection of them.
Yeah. Indiana Tech, so I'm a Warrior, and then I'm a Cardinal, and then I'm a Mastodon.
Wow.
And now I'm an Owl for my master's because I went to Western Governors.
You were in school just about as long as Boo Booey was.
A lot of people go to college for 7 years. Yeah, and they're called doctors.
Doctors. Oh shoot. Okay. Before we wrap up with the men's and switch to the women's, any other schools we want to talk about? One, how about let's talk a little bit about Wisconsin and Illinois because they're interesting to me. Yes. Wisconsin, I find to be fascinating. The transfer addition they've brought in has been able to really bolster this roster. Where Blackwell is, the freshman, a little bit maybe better than I expected that to be before the season. And they're at a spot now where I should give the context too. They did just lose to Arizona. They got drubbed by Arizona out there in Arizona. But this also is a Wisconsin team that beat the brakes off of a top 4 Marquette team.
Yeah.
And then went to East Lansing and just controlled the game against Michigan State and showed that they were more blue collar than Michigan State in that game, which again, as we've talked about earlier with Michigan State, that's typically not how those visits to the Breslin Center goes. Like you normally don't outwork and out tough MSU, and Wisconsin was able to do that in that game. And I think with the lineups, we talked about the transfer edition, we talked about Blackwell, how well he's been playing. Like they're at a point now where Connor Asijan, who had started the season, I see your hand. I'll get to you in a second. I'll finish this point. Connor Asijan, heading into the year, was dealing with a little bit of an injury. This is somebody who was all Big Ten freshman team last year, right? He's one of the better shooters the conference has, and he's not really seeing the floor. And it's not because he's doing anything necessarily wrong. It's that the lineup and rotation with Wisconsin is clicking and gelling so well. They're trying to find a way to get Asijan some more minutes because, again, Wisconsin's just playing that well. And for this team to be that deep and that good, I find that to be fascinating.
Well, and that is he was a key cog last year.
Yeah.
And now he's fighting to find time. And that's a great problem to have if you're Greg Gard, just because, hey, I've got this guy could be an all-conference player. That's how good he is. And I'm struggling to find him in a rotation. So I will give you $500 in imaginary money if you can guess.
Shroot bucks?
Yeah, there we go. Yes. If you can guess, if you can guess Wisconsin's next opponent.
Oh. No, I haven't looked.
Chicago State. So watch out, Badgers. It is at Madison. So like if Chicago State pulls this one off, okay, we're gonna have to put them on the bubble just because of the 2 wins.
Cougars are on the prowl. They I just can't believe it. So yeah, we'll play the transitive property with Chicago State and see how they do with Wisconsin.
They should beat them, right? I mean,
right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Northwestern beat Purdue, and
I'm sure we could get within 6 degrees of of, you know, that. Yeah.
If we're playing the transitive property game, Chicago State really beat number one Purdue. Like, yeah, that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting at. No, I was going to mention about Wisconsin. Arizona's a really good team. That's why they're number one in the
country. Yes, so, yes, like, yes, yes.
It's not unusual that, you know, a team that's ranked number one beats even a ranked team by 20 plus points. So that's not something to be like, whoa, they got beat by 25 points to get to Arizona. Arizona's really good. You should expect that they beat a lot of good teams by a lot of points.
And Wisconsin did not play well that day. Right. They made the trip out to Tucson. Like, they've been in the middle of a tough schedule. Like, there's a lot of reasons. Don't just chalk it up that Wisconsin's actually 25 points worse. Now, don't get me wrong. Arizona's absolutely a better team than Wisconsin is.
Yeah.
But I don't think the difference is 25 points if that setting changes, the time around it changes. Like, I just don't believe Wisconsin's actually 25 points worse. So don't read too much into that. The other school I mentioned was Illinois. I mean, Illinois's been putting itself through the meat grinder as well. They beat Florida Atlantic in New York City. They lost to a good, a great Tennessee team. I like watching this Tennessee team. Been able to see them play against a couple of Big Ten teams now. I really like this Tennessee team. Well,
they played Michigan State in their super secret scrimmage. Then they played Purdue. They played, you know, yeah, they played Illinois.
They might as well join the conference at this point. But they, I really like what they bring. But Illinois didn't lose by much to them. But the Illini,
it was 86-79. That was a pretty close game.
The Illini are fascinating to me because this group is a lot better than I thought they would be too. And again, it starts with Terrence Shannon Jr.
Sorry. Yes. Yes. Sorry. I was looking. Their only loss is the number four Marquette. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only time they've lost. Yeah. Terrence Shannon Jr. What was this, a wise move to come back? A lot of people were wondering if it was wise for him. I think it was. Mm-hmm. He's going to be able, whatever draft stock he may have, he is hitting on so many different cylinders right now that, you know, I mean, Illinois is, shoot, Dalton, if Michigan State doesn't recover, I say Illinois is probably the second best team in the conference.
Agreed. Because Maryland has nosedived in a way I didn't expect them to. Maryland, so I haven't been able to watch a ton of their games, but from just looking at numbers, the Terps can't shoot. It's been kind of surprising to me, given some of the players they have. I really thought that would be a big jump for them in Willard's second year in College Park, but I'm with you. I think as long as Michigan State's still trying to figure out their issues, Illinois absolutely looks to be the second best team in the conference.
Yeah, that catches me a little off guard because I guess we kind of threw them in as maybe like it was like Maryland's going to be the third best and maybe Illinois or Ohio State was kind of what we kind of just mentioned. We threw them in as maybes. We were pretty positive it was Maryland, but my goodness, things are gelling. And you remember last year, that was Brad Underwood's biggest thing, even into the tournament. We haven't gelled yet. And maybe it's now enough has returned back to where those pieces are finally gelling to where it's going to maybe come to fruition that they're going to have some success.
Well, and that's maybe how I'm doing the most stock in this, because I think outside of coaches like Izzo and maybe Painter, I think Underwood is just about as honest as it can be when talking with the press. Like they're kind of a class of their own, the way they like are just kind of just wear everything out on their sleeves. And Underwood had, I mean, throughout last year, you're right, said we haven't gelled. There were so many times during this season where he said, our team's just not there. We got no leaders. We got nothing. Like, he just would go on a tear ripping them. And then after the loss to Tennessee, he met with the media and said, I really like our team. He goes, we're good. We're really good. And like, he goes into like 30 or 40 more seconds explaining what he loves so much about his team. And I was sitting there like, okay, I saw the Underwood experience last year when he didn't love his team. And it sounded like it, not necessarily didn't love his team. I should correct the phrasing
there. I get what you're saying,
but it wasn't put together maybe the way that he wanted, or it was coming through the way he wanted. And then this year, to listen to him rave about his team and praise his team, I was so blown away. I was like, oh yeah, Illinois is going to be trouble for the rest of the Big Ten.
That's when, you know, like you said, he's so forward and honest that you know that when he starts talking them up to an extent, like how much he loves certain things about, you know, that it's okay, this is for real, then we probably should take note, because he's the first one to say, hey, we're just not working right now. It's just not working for us.
So we have
watch out for Illinois.
Yeah, I'm with you. We've talked a lot of Big Ten basketball on the men's side. Is there any other schools on the men's side you want to hit on?
No.
Okay, let's switch over to women's for the rest of the show.
Yes.
Big Ten women's basketball. All these teams have had a little bit of their appetizer as well. They've all played one game to this point in conference play.
A seven-way tie for first place and a seven-way tie for eighth place.
Gotta love how that works, right? But taking a look at some of the teams, you and I talked a little bit about before the show, Minnesota women's basketball, surprising a little bit. They're in the first year of Dawn Plitzer-White, who was the old West Virginia coach. She comes over to Minnesota. She's one of two first-year coaches with her team in the Big Ten this year, Robin Fralick, the other at Michigan State. But Dawn Plitzer-White really has things rolling there to start this one off, and a lot of it just comes from Era Braun. Braun has been fabulous to start this season. Their one Big Ten game, they beat Purdue towards the end in what was a little bit of a self-inflicted error by the Boilermakers towards the end of that game. But Mara Braun had 21 in that game. She played 39 minutes. I mean, Braun is the workhorse for the Gophers. And for the season now, she's averaging over 20 points a game, over 4 rebounds a game, and 3.5 assists a game. Like, Braun is doing it all for the Gophers.
Well, and you know, and I apologize, I was just making note of the sepia tones that I've got my camera right now, because the sun's shining directly in the window right next to me.
It's very so angelic.
It's yes. So just listen and just under and just no. I'm looking at their schedule. The only loss they had is to number 8 UConn at the time that they played, and they lost by 18. So they got thumped a little bit, but like, UConn. You always kind of, even in a, if it's a struggle year, you take it as, you know, that's UConn. But
and although the parity is closing in women's basketball, it still exists. Oh, like, UConn's sure. another oh, tier.
Sure. UConn could have a bad year and is still going to beat a majority of the teams they would play.
Which is actually what they're having. They're having a bad year and they're still going to beat a lot of teams, right. Given that they're UConn.
But it looks like they're beating some teams that I know that has had some success in women's basketball the past few years. Drake's been good. Kentucky, they've been in the tournament. Purdue, you know, I think Stony Brook has been good in the past. They're beating them. Like, it's. I'm wondering the same question about the Minnesota women as the Minnesota men. Is this sustainable? Are they going to be able to sustain it against a really tough top half of that Big Ten?
And for Minnesota, they were projected to be near the bottom of the Big Ten, I believe, on the women's side as well. I'm curious of that also. I think the win over Purdue kind of silences a little bit of the doubts in my mind, where it's like, oh yeah, even if they're not winning all these games, they're going to be there with a lot of these games, because I really like
the middle of the pack, maybe.
Potentially. Yeah, like, I think that's maybe fair. I think when you're looking at Big Ten women's basketball, you start with the top tier is Indiana, it's Ohio State, and it's Iowa, of course, led by Caitlin Clark. And after those three, I thought there would be another tier or class of, let's say, Maryland, Michigan, and Illinois. But all those teams have shown some flaws early on where I'm not terribly confident in any of those. And I'm curious about how some of these other teams in the middle of the pack will do. Penn State rose up to be ranked for the first time in like 6 or 7 years. They got up to number 25, but they did lose in overtime at Columbus to Ohio State.
Yeah.
But in that game, they lost their best player. McKenna Marisa went down with an injury, and I have actually not looked up to see if we have any injury update on McKenna Marisa, but that was a tough sight there in Columbus for their top player to go down.
Well, and I can, you know, recall Penn State actually having a pretty good program at one point, and they'd struggled lately. So it was going to be nice to see them at least maybe up there, you know, competing for some upper half positioning in the Big Ten. But it's not all over, but it's just, you know, you lose a player of that caliber, it kind of, you know, derails a lot of potential plans.
Well, and I just Googled to try and find an answer to our question, and I clicked on McKenna Marisa and news, and I got nothing. So I have no idea if there is any update on her status. But again, she left that Ohio State game with an injury. But this is somebody, just to give you context about how good she is averaging this season over 17 points a game. She has 36 assists on the year. 35 rebounds on the year. I mean, she's another one of those kind of do-it-all players, shooting
around 4 assists a game.
Yeah.
That's 3.6 assists a game.
So yeah.
While it might not seem a lot when she's scoring that much and still assisting that much, that's a pretty darn good versatile player that's pretty valuable.
And she's shooting at 51%. I mean, she is kind of the heartbeat of the squad. Now, Penn State also does have some interesting things, like Ashley Owusu still hasn't played for him yet. The transfer came in who was pretty highly anticipated. So they've got a lot to look forward to. But I you think it's natural to question without Marisa. And again, I have no idea what Marisa's status is, if she's coming back, if she's still out. But without Marisa, I think Penn State changes a lot. I don't know that they are without Marisa, but like you could feel it in overtime when she went down with that injury. It was like, oh boy, okay. Well, what happens now?
Makes you wonder if they aren't sure who they are without her too.
Yeah.
And so it might be a couple of games if she's out for extended time. We don't know because there's no news.
I took a look. Yeah, I couldn't find anything. I was surprised by that.
But like, they might have to take a couple of games, try to figure out who they are, and they might still be pretty decent.
Yeah.
But they need her back.
So that all is interesting. I do think that middle of the pack is open when we're talking Big Ten women's basketball. And I think two of the teams that are also kind of fighting in the midst of that played this past Saturday, Nebraska and Michigan State at the Breslin Center. Now, we've highlighted Michigan State a little bit because for a long stretch, they were number one in the country at shooting the three-point ball.
Right.
They're averaging 90-some points a game. I mean, they've been playing some really good basketball. They dropped to Nebraska on a day where they shot 4 of 27 from three-point range. And you can kind of just chalk it up to that. I get 4 for 20. This is a team that was shooting 44% from three heading into the game, and it went 4 for 27 in that one. So take what you will with it. Now, I will mention too, and Nebraska, hey, Nebraska's good. Alexis Markowski is going to be a handful for a lot of people in the Big Ten. I mean, she's going to be flirting with a double-double all year, just about every single game. But she's a matchup problem, certainly for Michigan State. Keep in mind, Michigan State is down on size. I mean, Michigan State is not very big. I think we've talked about it on this program before. Yep. But Julia Ayrault starting at center, she stands at 6'2", really probably could be playing the four. But due to what our roster is, she's got to be the five, and she's got to be doing just about all of the work at the five. So if she gets in foul trouble, it gets even skinnier. Like, there's a lot of pressure on Julia Ayrault to be playing pretty well at that five spot where she's already a little bit out of position. But Isa Alexander, the junior forward, who is one of the post players for Michigan State, she's out for the season. She suffered an injury earlier on this year. And then Gabby Elliott, who's not necessarily a center or anything or a five, but she's a wing who provides so much rebounding production. She's out for the year. So big part of the question is, and like hearing from Robin after that game, she wasn't as upset with the 4 for 27 because a lot of them were pretty good shots still. And that's how she grades everything, is shot selection.
You live and die by it.
And she had two great shooters that combined 2 for 15 in that game. And she goes, you know what? I'd take it again. Like that, that's fine. It just didn't go in. She goes,
trust that on any other night, it's not going to be 2 for 15.
I mean, how can you? and especially, again, we talk about, like, Michigan State is going to have mismatches all year where they're going to struggle with, in like, elite back-to-the-basket post players and offensive rebounders and second-chance type players. they're going to struggle with that. And they've got to be able to flip that. And a pretty big advantage where they can take on other teams is with that 3-point shooting that's been so good all year. Just wasn't that day. But yeah, they've got to find a way. And what Robin had talked about, not so much the shooting, but she was disappointed with the rebounding effort. They were out rebounded, I think, by 12 in that game. And again, they've got to find a way to get the smaller players to play bigger than they are. I mean, that's quite simply what they're looking at if they want to accomplish maybe what they can accomplish this year.
Well, and I've listened to a couple of the games. You know, I was listening to the Creighton one while I was putting up my Christmas lights. And even though they ended up losing that game, they played with Creighton, and Creighton's a pretty good team.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right. You know, you get against somebody like IU, they're probably going to struggle with being able to,
yes,
to play against Holmes in the post. It's going to be a struggle for them. It's not to say that they might not even be able to beat them. They did last year.
Correct.
But that just, you know, makes it a little bit tougher when they can't play really well in the post.
Yeah. And I mean, they're early in the Robin Frelick era. There are so many good signs, so many good things to take away, but they will have mismatches throughout this entire season. It just is what it is. But Nebraska, by the way, I do want to give a tip of the cap. Yeah. Talk about Markowski being just stellar, which she is. I think she had 0 points at halftime and it finished with something ridiculous, like 15, 16 or something like that.
She took over the second half a little bit, huh?
Yeah. And in Nebraska's win before that game against Michigan State, they played UNC Wilmington, and Jazz Shelley had her second career triple-double in that game. She's the first Husker, man or woman, to have multiple triple-doubles in Nebraska ball history. So congratulations to Jazz Shelley. Isn't that the greatest branding name? It's so good. But so that's kind of where we are early with the Big Ten women's basketball
season. Is Ohio State the biggest contender against Iowa, or is it IU?
I think I have a hard time giving a nod to any of the, like, I see the gap between all of them pretty razor thin, and I'm not even trying to step away from the question. I just
like literally think any of those three could win the conference, and it wouldn't.
I think so. I mean, Iowa was the preseason favorite picked by the media and coaches. Ohio State is a lot of other people's votes. I actually picked Indiana. IU is kind of still figuring itself out as well here early in the season, but I really like a lot of the pieces they have. I think if they can gel it together, I think Indiana can really make a run at it. Ohio State's athleticism is something that's really tough for teams to deal with. And in Iowa, of course, when you have Caitlin Clark, like you're probably favored. Now, you don't just have a chance in every game, but like forget any other variables. You're favored every game just because she's that elite.
Right. Well, and she makes so much more possible when she's on the court. So yes. Like, even if she's having an off night, the other people are going, she's still going to warrant people to be on her because you don't want her to catch fire. So if she's having an off night, you want to try to keep her on that off night. So you're not going to take anything. You're not going to go, oh, well, she's not shooting well, we can lay off her. No, that's not. So you're always going to have two people looking out for her, or one definitely following her everywhere she goes.
And I want to pull up what she's actually at career-wise now, because we mentioned earlier, I'm pretty sure we did, that she hit her 3,000th career point. So she's the first player ever, I believe men or women, to have 3,000 points, 750 rebounds, and 750 assists. Like, what she's doing is just, it's stupid. Like, it's just insane.
I think they said high school, college, and all professional levels. There's only one person to do that, and it's her.
It's ridiculous. So she now has 3,041 points. She has 779 rebounds, 879 assists. Like, she'll finish probably with, she'll finish with 1,000 assists. Last year, she had 327 assists in that season alone, and she's got 81 right now this year. Like, she's going to add probably.
That's like accounting for like a lot of points, other than what she was scoring too.
Yeah. So she'll have more than 1,000 assists by the end of this year. And she's probably going to break not just the Big Ten women's basketball scoring record or the college women's basketball scoring record. I mean, if you want to play the game across the lines, like, she's probably going to break Pistol Pete's mark of most points ever scored in college basketball history. Like, it's ridiculous what she's doing. Again, she's at 3,041 points, right? Last year alone, she had 1,055. She scored more than 1,000 in that year. And she right now is at 324. So if you add on, let's say, another 700, she'd be at 3,700 plus. And I think Pistol Pete's is around 3,500, somewhere in that range. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, and I believe Caitlin could still play another year. But at the end of this year, she'll be probably 3,600, 3,700.
She might make more money at Iowa than she would in the WNBA.
It's not too big of a stretch to believe that. But yeah, I mean, at the end of this season, she'll have probably, like, if we're just doing projections, 3,600, 3,700 career points, maybe 1,100 assists, and probably flirting around close to 900 rebounds in her career.
This is truly, I mean, and it's kind of cliche, but be happy you're alive during this time, because, like, this is a different type of player that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And she's something, like her or not, you've got to understand and even respect the fact that the greatness that she has.
Absolutely.
And so, like, you know, even if it's, you know, oh, I hate Iowa and I don't like Caitlin Clark, that's fine. But you've got to understand the reason why you dislike her so much is because she's really that good.
She is simply unprecedented. Yes. Like, I don't really know how else to put it. It's amazing. Yeah. But that'll wrap up our Big Ten women's basketball talk for this week, and it'll actually wrap up the show. So, Sam, on the way out the door, tell everybody where they can find us.
Yeah, on the TikToks, the Instagram, and the platform formerly known as the Twitter. It is at B1G_talk. That's B1G_talk. Dalton, not B-I-G, B1G_talk. Big Talk. Go to Facebook. It's B1G Talk. Big Talk. Do not click on All Big Talk. That's the wrong Big Talk. We're just Big Talk. That's it. Done. That's it. But we stream weekly on the ASAP network. We are on Friday mornings at 9 o'clock, which is why I'm wrapping it up at almost 10 o'clock on the ASAP network. Our audio podcast version will be out through Lounge Media Group later that day. So later today, it'll be out on Lounge Media Group. If you want to watch us, you can go to Spotify because we have our video up on there. So, but you can also listen to it too. So there you go. Long-winded, but there it is.
All right. Yeah, make sure you check us out all those different ways. We appreciate you all tuning in and joining us for this week's edition. Make sure you join us next week. I won't be here, sadly, because work's taking me away.
Episode 100, man.
But it is episode 100. It'll be a nice... In. Is he good? Good. Yes. Tony's coming in from the bullpen. That's and right. That'll be a lot of fun. Of course, Tony had a hand in so many of those episodes. Yeah, so there we go. It'll be a fun reunion, a fun celebration. Make sure you join us for our 100th episode next week with Sam and Tony. And I might try even popping by just for a moment. We'll see. Maybe with a, we'll see. It's works tough. But anyways, thank you all so much for tuning in and joining us at least this week. That's Sam Sprunger. I'm Dalton Shetler. And until next time, so long, everybody.
See ya.